versus the City of Minneapolis. Council, each of you will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel if you'd like to use that time for rebuttal. We do appreciate the various amicus briefs that have been presented to us, but of course the only arguments we'll be hearing today will be those of the parties in this case. The timing restrictions are indicated in the podium in the middle, but if you prefer for health reasons to use the microphone closest to the table, you certainly may do so. It's entirely up to you. If you use the podium in the center, there is a button that you can raise or lower the lectern to your height. Please state your name as you're commencing each leg of your argument so that we can keep track of the argument in our audio recording of the proceedings. And with that, counsel for appellant, whenever you are ready to proceed, you have the floor.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Yvonne Ludmer, and I represent appellant City of Minneapolis. I would like to frame today with the plain language of the Minnesota Environmental Rights Act, MIRA, the statute at issue here. There are a few different claims that can be made under MIRA, but the one that's relevant here requires a plaintiff to make a prima facie showing that the conduct of a defendant has or is likely to cause the pollution, impairment, or destruction of natural resources. MIRA then defines pollution, impairment, or destruction as any conduct which materially adversely affects or is likely to materially adversely affect the environment. And digging in there for a moment, that's crucial language. MIRA requires a showing of conduct that is likely to materially adversely affect the environment, not conduct that may do that, not conduct that could possibly lead to other conduct that may adversely affect the environment, but conduct that itself is likely to materially adversely affect the environment. And the claimed conduct here is passage of Minneapolis 2040. And the appellees—
I'm trying to imagine when then a claim in practice, such an expansive project like this or plan like this, how it would happen. You would have to wait until a certain point before a challenge is made. And why wouldn't that point, wherever we put it, be essentially too late in the process to make a claim that matters and that has any chance of averting huge expenditures and total, kind of a Frankenstein approach to zoning if in the event that the claim prevails later on?
I've spent a lot of time thinking about that as well, Your Honor. And what I can say is that I think that there's a temptation here to proceed under a false dichotomy of either this claim is allowed to proceed under this assumption of a full build out or no such claim can proceed. And that's not the question that's before this court. There are ways it might be possible to show likely adverse effects from a comprehensive plan. If you get the right set of experts, the right set of planners, the right set of development experts to say passage of this comprehensive plan is likely to result in a build out that would look like this. There would be buildings here along these corridors, buildings here that would not otherwise come in. And then you would have a separate expert, presumably an environmental expert, to analyze that particular projected build out that you now have some record basis to say is likely.
These experts essentially would be just making, I don't know, I'm trying to imagine a world where the experts are doing little more than speculative predictions about what might happen based upon what is allowed, if everything is allowed.
Well, and that's the key to me, Your Honor, is that, those experts would be making, hopefully not purely speculative predictions based on some fact, but that would be many, many times more precise and more likely to occur than what is being analyzed here in terms of the full build-out. Because there is no record basis to suggest that a full build-out will occur. And that's not even the claim here. The claim here is that an immediate full build-out would occur.
Counsel?
Yes, sir.
We're not completely on a clean slate here because we have the Supreme Court's decision. And I keep reading it and reading it and reading it. And I keep asking if the Supreme Court has decided, or at least has indicated how it would decide, what appears to be the crux of the issue here when making the determination whether or not this is a merit claim that survives summary judgment, can you presume a full build-out? I mean, that's the issue, right?
That the issue that the Supreme, respectfully, the issue that the Supreme Court, I believe, addressed is whether a plaintiff can allege that an immediate full build-out would occur, and whether that allegation on a Rule 12, when challenged on a Rule 12 motion, allows them to proceed further.
But here's what I'd like you to address. The city made this argument before the Supreme Court that you can't presume a full build-out, that's too speculative. And the Supreme Court says that the plaintiff's complaint presumes a full build-out, and the complaint was sufficient to survive the motion to dismiss. And the Supreme Court refers to the presumed full build-out and then talks about allegations regarding the way that presumed full build-out could result in significant adverse environmental effects. I mean, hasn't the Supreme Court, or has the Supreme Court, essentially held by saying this complaint as pleaded survives the Rule 12 motion to dismiss? Hasn't the Supreme Court endorsed the legal theory that it's based on a presumed full build-out? And what we need to see is whether or not the plaintiff can present sufficient evidence to establish these adverse effects.
I believe the Supreme Court said the Supreme Court allowed the allegation of full build-out. They didn't say that you can go through the whole lawsuit presuming a full build-out.
But here's the thing. The Supreme Court doesn't refer to the full build-out at any point in this opinion as an allegation. It refers to it as a presumption. And there's a difference between a presumption and an allegation. And if the Supreme Court really believed that a full build-out is an allegation, why would it refer to it as a presumption? And if the Supreme Court thought you couldn't go forward on a presumptive or a presumption, why wouldn't it have said this case should be dismissed? You can't go forward on a presumption when that was the argument the city made to the Supreme Court.
That is not how I recall the Supreme Court's description. I'm happy to defer to you. I don't have it immediately in front of me. I recall the Supreme Court referring to allegations of full build-out, but I respectfully, I'm...
But Smart Growth alleges in its complaint that a presumed full build-out of the plan is likely to materially adversely affect the environment in a number of ways. List those. The question before us is whether these claims, and those seem to be referring to the claims of environmental harms, are sufficient to allege causation. I'm just having a hard time seeing that the Supreme Court treated the legal theory of the complaint, which is a presumed full build-out, as an allegation, as opposed to a presumptive that it did not reject.
But even to the extent it treated it merely as a presumptive, that doesn't negate the obligation of the plaintiff in this case to then present evidence that supports the use of that presumption later. The point, in a complaint, you may not have to support, you may not have to allege the, you may not have to, you don't have to prove facts that would support the use of a particular assumption. They alleged that a full build-out would take place, and then they alleged that this presumed full build-out would have certain effects. That does not relieve them of the obligation on summary judgment to show that this presumed full build-out is likely to occur. That's what's required now. Facts underlying that presumed full build-out, and that's what the record is completely devoid of, Your Honor.
But the Supreme Court was aware of that.
The Supreme Court was, to my mind, clear that it was responding to the stage of the litigation that we were at. They wanted to make very clear that at the Rule 12 stage, we're not talking about the we're not in the world of federal courts where you talk about the plausibility of allegations. They were talking about what was alleged here, and that these allegations, if they can be proven, would support a MIRA claim.
Well, is it possible to read the Supreme Court's opinion as saying, presuming a full build-out, we're going to give plaintiffs the benefit of the doubt as to its allegations of resulting environmental impacts, so that the full build-out presumption is sort of endorsed by the Supreme Court here? I mean, there is certainly other language in the opinion where the Supreme Court states that a presumed full build-out has merit in terms of an approach because you need to assess the entire plan and you couldn't do it piecemeal.
So that part where the Supreme Court says, you know, addresses the use of the full build out at that stage, I think, you know, that comes back to what we were discussing earlier of, is there another way? And yet the city's argument at that stage was comprehensive plans cannot be subject to mirror review. And the Supreme Court said, no, they are allowed to proceed with this lawsuit. And the question here is different. The question here is, did they now do enough? Did they put enough evidence into the record to allow them to proceed with a mirror claim that requires them to show that the city's conduct, passage of Minneapolis 2040, is likely to materially adversely affect the environment?
So the legal issue we have is it, did the district court err by presuming a full build-out, which is what was pled by the plaintiff, and which is what the Supreme Court said was sufficient to survive Rule 12? Because I'm just thinking of Rule 12. We have Rule 12 motions where it's like, well, if, even if all these facts are true, excuse me, as a matter of law, your claim fails.
But you know, candidly, if the allegation of an immediate full build-out could then have been proven, then yes, I think there's a reasonable chance that mirror liability would be likely. If on January 1st, 2020,
I agree with you. What I'm hung up on is the fact that the Supreme Court recognized that that was a presumption, and the Supreme Court didn't say that that presumption was a flawed legal theory.
But it was an allegation at that point. That wasn't a legal theory. That was an allegation that there would be an immediate full build-out.
Well, the Supreme Court says, you raise that issue, it's a presumption that was in the pleading. I'm having a hard time getting past that word.
And the Supreme Court also, repeated that it was not, that, the parties at that time were arguing about whether a prima facie case had been made. And I said, we're not talking about a prima facie case at this point. We're at Rule 12. We're talking about allegations and whether this set of allegations can survive and move this case forward. And the Supreme Court said, yes, because plaintiffs alleged that there would be an immediate full build-out and that immediate full build-out would have all these other effects. That to me, they were careful to limit their decision in that way. And here we are asking whether a prima facie case has been made. And the direction is that you look, and the direction from MIRA and the direction from courts is that you look at the facts underlying it and whether the conduct is likely to cause materially adversely effects. And the plaintiffs here would like to replace that whole chain of causation with this assumption of an immediate full build-out. And not only has that not occurred, as we've seen, but the following passage of Minneapolis 2040, new development of major projects slowed. That is undisputed in the record. New development of new units, new residential units slowed. That is also undisputed in the record. It's undisputed in the record that there's never been a full build-out of any comprehensive plan. That is clear. That was a basis for the court's decision on temporary injunction last summer. It is also undisputed in the record that the previous comprehensive plan was not built out.
There seems to be a bit of a discrepancy between the arguments regarding immediate full build-out and some of the factual findings or the factual statements, I guess, that the district court makes. The district court says the city admits that it anticipates and gives a number, approximately 43,000 new residential units, and expects another 49,000, and so doesn't necessarily require an immediate full build-out, right? As long as you're admitting the new residential units, and as long as there's some, then the question is less about immediate full build-out and more about do those admissions, would those have an environmental impact? And then you look at what the experts have said or not said. The district court says that the city's expert doesn't really dispute. So it's not necessarily, in the district court's mind, it's not really a battle of the experts, and it really is you've got an admission from the city about new residents and one expert on the scale, and together those things show an impact.
Well, I have a couple of things I'd like to say in response to that, Your Honor. First, the district court itself characterized the full build-out presumption as outcome determinative and stated explicitly that it was relying on it. It did have the language that you read as well, but that's not what it relied on. Further, as we note in our brief, we dispute that we ever admitted that was anticipated. Those numbers come from a draft appendix previously part of the comprehensive plan, not as finally adopted, that showed a development scenario that could meet Metropolitan Council's forecasts for population and household growth in the city under Minneapolis 2040. There's nothing to suggest that those development scenarios couldn't have been met before, that those population forecasts couldn't have been met under the previous comprehensive plan. In fact, it's undisputed in the record that they could have, that there was 700,000 to 1.4 million new units that could have been built out under the previous comprehensive plan. This idea, and that sort of points to a major underlying flaw in the causation argument here, because the city is required by Metropolitan Council to be able to accommodate the Metropolitan Council's projected influx of population, projected influx of households. There is no way that a comprehensive plan could cause that projection made before the comprehensive plan was adopted. So to suggest that the city's comprehensive plan would cause these 42,000 or 49,000 new units merely because Minneapolis 2040 could accommodate them is a misstatement of the record and misapplies how causation works. And I see that my time is up, so I appreciate your time.
Don't run away just yet. I think we might have more questions.
I do have another question for you. And one other thing I'm struggling with is, what's wrong with the notion that we would expect environmental assessment to be consistent with what is permissible under the plan? And I had this reoccurring thought when I read the arguments. I mean, we sometimes hear in a criminal case from the state, well, don't worry about that application of this statute. We would never charge somebody under that theory. It's like, well, but yes, you can, so we do have to worry. And I mean, so here it seems like we're engaging in speculation no matter what at this point. It's either speculation of a full build-out or speculation of some other partial build-out. Wouldn't it be best to assume the full build-out because that is, in fact, what is authorized here and assess the plan from that perspective?
Well, right now the question isn't do we speculate this or that. The question is do we proceed on speculation or not? And I would say the impact is the same reason that courts don't issue advisory opinions.
Okay, but here's the thing. The Supreme Court said this case could go forward based on a speculative pleading. Presuming a full build-out, this case can go forward. I mean, it seems to me that the Supreme Court has already said we're going to have some level of speculation here because we don't have any build-out yet to look at. We're just talking about a set of values and policy objectives.
But I think the Supreme Court said that this case can go forward based on a pleading that may or may not be correct ultimately. The pleading was that on passage of Minneapolis 2040, there would be an immediate full build-out.
Right, but there are two ways to kick a case on Rule 12, right? You could say, okay, no one disputes the facts, but as a matter of law, this isn't an adequate claim. Or you could say, well, you've pleaded a legally recognized claim, but you need to bring in the facts. We'll see whether or not you can do that. Seems to me that what the Supreme Court was saying is the latter, which kind of lends me to conclude that the district court maybe did not err by saying, well, based on what the Supreme Court has said, I think that we go with a presumed full build-out. And on this record, I've got one expert report from the plaintiffs, not much from the city. The plaintiffs win.
And, Your Honor, all I can say to that is that when you pass the Rule 12 stage, you still need to present facts, and there were no there were no facts to show that this presumed full build out is likely. They had the opportunity to present facts to show that this presumed full build out that they alleged would be likely, and they did not present any such facts, and that's why the city's position is that they didn't make a prima facie case. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
May it please, I'm sorry. You're taller than I am. Sorry.
You're sorry that he's taller than you are?
Well, that too, but I'm used to that. May it please the court, Jack Perry from the Taft Law Firm, and I'm here on behalf of the plaintiffs, now respondents, the mirror plaintiffs here. And I want to address first, Judge Ross, you began with the question about as I would paraphrase it, is okay, if not at the beginning, before the comp plan is begun, then where along the process do you do environmental review, or when is MIRA triggered? And consistent with Judge Larkin's comments about what the Supreme Court said is, I would point to footnote number 17 of their opinion, where they say in the, I guess it's the first sentence, there is some validity to Smart Growth's argument that a MIRA challenge to the plan itself is the only way to consider the potential environmental effects of the entire plan, rather than individual projects, comma, the effects of which would necessarily be only a portion of what Smart Growth alleges the cumulative effects of the plan will be. I think that gets to your point. Judge Larkin, if I can get to your comment, is there is no question that we won on Rule 12, and the court's, Judge Moore, in his opinion, is very clear on that. But he has some language, which I suspect is the language that is causing you to say, this is not the normal, we're given deference because it's a Rule 12, because they say on page 596, and it's the paragraph beginning, although the plan is a planning document, blah, blah, blah. And there's a sentence right after footnote 17 that begins the projections. And I think it's the penultimate sentence from the decision. It says, and it's just one sentence, but it's a semicolon, so it's super long. The projections supporting Smart Growth's allegations are based on a full build out. But that full build-out is what the actual land use criteria contained in the plan allows for. In other words, it's not just that they're saying, I pled it, therefore we're going to accept it for purpose of this. They are firmly stating that that's what it says, because that's what it does say. And the court had the copy of the plan when it was reviewing this, of course.
And the court went on to say Smart Growth is not speculating about the type of actions that will result for
right.
other future comprehensive plans.
And so that's why, I mean, without asking Judge Moore what he meant by that, that's why when you read it and why I read it, and the district court clearly vacillated with that, what are they saying here? But it's not usual, and that is very supportive for our position. But more importantly is what is it that the city is actually asking you to do? And it is really one legal argument they have. They repeat a lot of the old arguments from the Supreme Court that aren't really before you, but they're asking you to look at 116B04B, which is the MIRA statute, the burdens of proof. And they're asking you to be the first court in this state to interpret that to require environmental impacts under MIRA to be based on what is likely to be built, not what was proposed or allowed to be built. And you can't do that under this language. And in the city's defense, they read the right language. It says, our prima facie showing, the MIRA plaintiffs, is that the conduct of the defendant has or is likely to cause the pollution, blah, 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 blah. Okay, the subject there is, going back to English teaching days, is the conduct. It's the conduct of the defendant. And they want this to be read as, we need to prove the conduct is likely to happen. Well, I've been doing this a long time, and I'm usually in their shoes where I'm trying to jam in a project, whether it's a power line, whether it's a feedlot, whether it's mining operation, whatever. And I would love if that was the burden of proof under a MIRA claim to say, no, you have to prove waste management or
if I can jump in on this point about focusing in on the conduct.
Yeah.
Because I do think that relates to the causation question. I assume you would concede that simply passing the 2040 plan or literally changing the words in the code, the zoning code, that act, that conduct, doesn't have environmental impact.
The distinction in this case, I believe, is...
Just asking if you would concede that act wouldn't. Or do you think that act of changing the words...
Well, that's the same as the permit. I mean,
that's... paper would have an...
Judge Bryant, I agree that that's true with a permit. It's approved, any allowance, any plan, it's the third party's actual implementation or enactment or whatever that is. So yes, absolutely agree with you.
What about the argument that the causation here is really population growth, not an act, but the increased growth, and that's what's causing the environmental impacts?
Here's the fallacy of that, is that's true of every single project. In my future life, when I represented waste companies, they didn't create the demand for waste. The population did. They responded to that, and they expanded their landfills or built landfills. Power lines are built because of the need. The environmental review, it doesn't matter whether it's justified or not justified. People come forward with a proposal under 116B04B, conduct. And they propose there is a demand for population growth. Okay, we are responding to it. How you respond is your conduct. How are you going to address that? And there are a whole bunch of ways to address that. In this case, they said, we are going to allow a massive densification. Right, wrong, or indifferent, but if you're gonna have a massive densification to respond to this population growth, all of which I don't have any objection to, no one has objection to that, it's just there are environmental implications when you have a massive densification project.
Then the question for summary judgment really does involve the environmental implications, as you say, of the entire response to population growth, right? And it seems to me that that is much more of a battle of the experts and much more a question of fact on the causation point.
Here's that's what the city says, but like, I'm gonna go back to landfill example. It's super easy. Is that landfills have an environmental positive? I mean, the alternative is dumping in, you know, wildcat dumping. That's why landfills exist. They're all engineered to perfection, so they say. So is it net environmental good? Probably. But for environmental review purposes, as required by MEPA, by MIRA, in all the cases, no matter what the project is, you only look at what are the impacts and how do we address those environmental impacts, the adverse impacts. Not a weighing, is this landfill better or worse for the environment? Is the power line better or worse for the environment? Is the polymet better or worse for the environment? It is polymet, you look at what are the environmental impacts. Not, is it a net good? I don't know if it's net good. This court doesn't know whether it's net good, but for all the cases where you've addressed
with all the respect, the distinction is that this is a comprehensive plan, not one project. Right, it's a little easier to isolate the impacts of a project, but if we're talking about the entire response to population growth, then I think we are looking at the net positive, aren't we, in terms of summary judgment to determine causation?
Judge Bryan, I have two really good illustrations which the city has never responded to. Is this is not the first time that comprehensive plan has been looked at, and it's not even the first time in this state. First. In the 2016, I think there's multiple EISs done in Seattle for a really, really similar plan. It was for 70,000 new residential units, and they did in full environmental impact. No one complained about it. Of course, it's state law. Here, in the state of Minnesota, the city of Moorhead did three, what they call 2040 area growth plans for an expansion of 18,000 square feet, or square, whatever it was, square miles. No, give me square miles. Whatever it was about the same size as the city of Minneapolis, ironically. And they voluntarily did an AUAR, which is an EIS. And they did that based upon what was being proposed, not what was actually going to happen. Because similar to this, who knows what's going to actually happen?
Maybe you can connect it to the issue before us, which is whether there's a genuine issue of material fact. I see that there could be a voluntary EIS or AUAR. I see how that might be a good idea.
Yeah.
But in terms of the question before us, it seems that the conduct is passing this comprehensive plan or the response to projected growth. And if that's the conduct, then aren't we required to consider this battle of the experts, which would be a question of fact?
That's exactly what Judge Klein thought, and if you read in his order, he's frustrated, and if you read some of the oral transcripts, he's really frustrated, because that's what he thought he was going to get. From the day we filed this on December 3rd, 2018, all the way until the very end, he anticipated there would be a battle of experts. But what happened is that the city conceded that if there is a full build-out, our expert is uncontroverted. There is no contrary testimony. And that's all over in his report, or his order, because that's what happened. The only issue that the city has drawn is, will there...
It does seem that the city is disputing the extent of this build-out.
That's it.
Right?
But not the...
So that, to me, is a little different than,
yes,
than how you're trying to portray that.
Well, no. What I'm saying, Your Honor, I obviously didn't say it right, I apologize, is that assuming there is a full build-out, which is what I believe the Supreme Court assumed, and that's what all of... That's what MEPA requires. That's what 116B04B requires. That's what I think... If you assume that, the only expert report you have in the record, and the district court had in the record, is Polly's expert report that says, here's the parade of horribles. No one, and I told the city, you can't find anyone who's going to disagree with that. So the only issue before Judge Klein and you is the presumption accurate? And I believe Judge Larkin, she picked up on what the Supreme Court said, is you are to presume that. And you presume that not because they rule on it, because every single environmental case in the state of Minnesota has analyzed for environmental purposes what's proposed. Because guess what? The proposer, whether PolyMed or Waste Management or whoever it is, you get to define what your project is and what you're going forward with. And the same is true, now that the Supreme Court has said this applies to comprehensive plans, same is true for cities and counties that have comprehensive plans. And so they have defined what they're proposing. And then one of the things the Supreme Court picked up on, at least in the oral argument, is that with regard to these 150,000 new residential units, they were approved not discretionary, but as a matter of right, which means we don't have to get permission to do it. The developers can go forward and build at their heart's content. And so I don't know of a logical, legal, statutory, any basis to say we're not going to look at what was actually proposed by the city. And the reason why, if you look at page 47 through 50 of the addendum, which is our proposed order, you look at that, I lay out the multiple opportunities the city had since December 3rd, 2018, when we first filed our lawsuit, to scale back what they were proposing, to change the language.
That's what I'm wondering here. I mean, if the city can't, if there's a chance that full build-out is going to be allowed as a determinative factor in assessing environmental impacts, why doesn't the city come back and say, okay, we're going to scale this back? You can take a single-family residence and now convert it to a duplex or triplex up to this number of people. And then we'll kind of, that's a safe number to go with. It concerns me to sort of go back to the example of prosecutors who promised they wouldn't, you know, charge a case that way. It's like, well, you have permission now to do this. We can't just trust that it won't happen. It could happen. And if it does happen, what are the impacts? If there's a dispute, why doesn't the city just scale it back and say, well, no, we're going to put a limit on our plan that respects environmental concerns, and we'll take it from there.
And the date that is most exasperating for me is, okay, up until February 10th, 2021, the district court, this court, all agreed that my theory was wrong. Okay. But on February 10th, 2021, the Supreme Court said, no, the theory is right. And at that point, Judge Larkin, that's why I'm thinking, well, okay, we've had a year and a half. If you really don't want to propose 150,000 new units, scale it back. Say that. I mean, you can do that unilaterally. And so that's what's baffling to me, and why, Judge Bryan, when you asked the question, is that they have not made any effort. I can finish, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Yes, go ahead and finish your point.
The city has made no effort to scale back what they're requesting, to modify, to clarify anything in response to these environmental concerns other than raise the same legal arguments, which is, that's their prerogative. But from an environmental perspective is, there's a cost. If you're going to propose something, you're the proposer, and you, if you don't want to do environmental review, you got to scale back. That's what I, when I represent developers or whatever, if I don't want to do that, I limit what I'm doing, and that just hasn't been done. I'm sorry, I'm over my time. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilor Pellett, any rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. You know, there's a lot there. I'll start with this idea that...
Again, for the record, if you could start with
I apologize, Your Honor. Yvonne Ludmer on behalf of the appellant city of Minneapolis.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll start with this idea that this city, that, that builders could just go out and build all these buildings overnight just on a whim.
If that, I could direct you a little bit more precise, that first footnote from the district court judge's order, the emphasis on the admission of the city that the plan authorizes, quote, as a matter of right, the full build-out, right? So to the extent that, I know you're arguing that there's this other more dispositive issue about the presumption, but we can look at, call it an alternative basis, if you will, what the city has admitted. Is that, according to the district court, even based solely on the city's admitted anticipated growth of new residential units, such housing growth would trigger the need for an EIS? So focused on that piece of it that is based on, as a matter of right, not a full build-out, but based on some smaller projection, seems the district court reached the same conclusion that there's no question of fact because the city's admitted it.
I would disagree with that as well. The idea that the...
Just to be clear, what are you disagreeing with?
Actually, most of what is... I'm sorry, may I pull the court's
absolutely.
Order so that I can...
Council's noting a general disagreement with everything I've said.
Well, I wasn't sure if you're disagreeing with what the the premise of Judge Bryant's question, or whether you're disagreeing with the district court's assessment.
I apologize.
I wanted to clarify.
I would say I disagree with the district court's characterization of most of that. First of all, that would not trigger an EIS. The EIS trigger is for a certain number of units, 1,000 or 1,500, contiguously built, proposed by the same developer. This isn't contiguous. This isn't proposed by the same developer. An EIS is not being triggered. There's no proposal, first of all. There's no proposal to build these units. I think that's a pretty key distinction to make. And then as to the admitted anticipated growth of new residential units, that is, again, that language was from a scenario, a potential development scenario, that does not relieve the plaintiffs of their statutory obligation to show that it is likely that that Minneapolis 2040 will cause materially adverse effects to the environment. And as to the timing of it, this is something that the Environmental Quality Board has also addressed. You don't look at the potential environmental effects of things that might possibly could someday happen. That's not a good use of court resources. That's not a good use of government resources. The Environmental Quality Board, when they exempted comprehensive plans from MEPA, said that these actions, passing a comprehensive plan, are followed by other governmental actions that will implement the action and directly affect the environment until environmental review is more reasonable at the point of implementation. And again, that comes back to the likely requirement of MIRA. If we're looking at things that are not likely, or at least that have not been shown to be likely, then we're not following the language of MIRA. And I think that to me, that turns on its head, that Mr. Perry turned on its head the who would be the first to take a new action here. The idea that this would be the first court to require someone to show that a proposed action or a permitted action is actually likely, that turns it on its head, because every single other MIRA case, the permitted action was likely. That wasn't a question. That those permits were granted because a developer had created a plan, had proposed, had hired architects, had designed a project, and had proposed and had built out and had a proposed built out plan. It just was not a question of whether it was likely under MIRA in the same way as it is here. Here it is. We are breaking new ground. This would be the first time that MIRA is going to be applied to a comprehensive plan, and so this is the first time that the question needs to be asked. Is this action likely to occur? Because no other case has been based on this kind of speculation. No other mirror case has been based on this kind of speculation. And the ones that came close in Schaller and in Stancil, the court rejected those as too speculative to be reviewable under Mira. Very quickly, we did address the Seattle and Moorhead situations repeatedly. Seattle, that there is a law there similar to MEPA that specifically requires comprehensive plans to have EISs, and they have relaxed standards that directly guide how they are. It's a different state, different law, not applicable. Moorhead, there was, if you, those area plans have been linked in various filings. They're comprehensive area plans. They have development that is specifically anticipated, not just permitted, specifically anticipated development happening in a certain way to fill up green, formerly green space, not a potential, you know, area that could be, could overall be, could possibly sometime in the next thousands of years happen. And I see my time is up. Can I say one last thing, Your Honor?
You can summarize in a sentence.
Well, I would just say that if we make this assumption of a full build-out, one thing to consider is that there is no height restriction in downtown Minneapolis. So possibly the next mural lawsuit here would be assuming that 150-foot-story skyscrapers would replace every single building in downtown Minneapolis and requiring the city to analyze the environmental impacts of that. That would have as little basis as this. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Ludmer, and thank you, Mr. Perry. And thank you for the amicus participants in your briefing, all the briefing. Very thorough, very helpful. It's always nice when we have well-represented clients like you, like your clients. And we will take the matter under advisement. It's submitted. We'll issue our opinion within the statutory period.